What's up, Bike Rumor fans, and welcome to a very special edition of the Bike Rumor podcast. Our guest today is Aisha McGowan, aka Quick Brown Fox, aka I Suppose. You may know her as one of the few African-American female pro cyclists, or you may not. If it's the latter, that's what she's hoping to change. Her hashtag sign-off on social is typically this: representation matters. This conversation was something. I don't want to say difficult, because it wasn't, but it was important. And in my experience, anything that's important carries with it a certain weight, a feeling of obligation to do it right, which can be hard when you're stepping into the unknown. Fortunately, Aisha is a patient guide, bearing with me as I stumble through some questions or topics about race, diversity, inclusion, and representation. It's an amazing conversation, and I sincerely hope that you'll stick around, listen all the way through, and more importantly, share it widely with your friends, whether they're cyclists or not. Please welcome Aisha McGowan.
Aisha, thanks for coming on the Bike Rumor Show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so it's taken a few weeks to get our schedules lined up because we've both been traveling quite a bit, and I think you were just overseas as well, right?
In the month of May.
Yeah. Where'd you go?
I went to the UK.
Awesome. I still haven't been there. What for? What part?
It was a dual purpose trip this time. I decided it was time for us to have a honeymoon. I got married like 4 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
And just hadn't had the money or the time. And so we kind of did a honeymoon and then kind of a work trip at the end of it, multitasking.
Right on. What kind of work? Like cycling for you or something for your husband? Your husband's name's Will, right?
Yeah. More so like I like, you know, my advocacy stuff. I like to go to the UK once a year and talk to people about diversity and representation. And I think it's been super effective. It's really taken off over there and I'm really excited about it. So definitely worth the effort and time that I've put into it.
Awesome. And then as far as racing and stuff goes, how's your season going so far this year?
I mean, I guess like every season, it's a mix of up and downs. I've had some really great moments and I went to nationals this weekend and didn't have a great moment. So it's a mixed bag, but, overall I think it's been really good. And so I'm excited about, you know, what I've been doing and I'm just having fun, to be honest, which was my goal for this year. Just kind of throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks and
nice.
What well, doesn't.
Yeah, if it's not fun, why do it, right? So let's go back in time for a second. How did you get into cycling?
I mean, I started riding a bike as a kid. Like to the traditional, you get a bike, you learn how to ride it, you ride around for however long, and then don't do that anymore. but as an adult, I started riding as a commuter in college as just a way to get to class faster. And that sort of somehow ended up here through first commuting and then advocacy and then like unsanctioned racing and then racing. And I feel like I've just tried so many different ways of enjoying bikes and I've loved most of them, to be honest. And this is the one that has been, I guess, the most prominent. but I feel like I've had a very extensive bike journey and it's probably only just beginning, to be honest.
Yeah. You were a messenger too for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I think that's in your bio somewhere.
I was for a very brief couple of months. I was not very good at it, but I was a messenger in Boston for a while, for a little bit.
Okay. And now, for some reason, I was getting the impression you lived down near Atlanta, but are you in New York or Atlanta or Boston? Where are you now?
I live just outside of Atlanta in Decatur, Georgia right now.
Okay, cool. So the racing bug, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're doing a lot of crits now, or do you do more of the stage race type stuff?
I feel like the crits are more accessible, but I've been trying to do more stage racing. So as much stage racing as I can, it's harder because it's more expensive. You often need to find a team and all of the things that come with that. But I feel like this year I've done a good amount of stage racing and a couple crits here and there as well.
Cool. Because you're still technically a privateer, right?
Solo racer.
Right. And what is, but you sponsored by some pretty big brands like Liv and SRAM, Cliff Bar, Feedback, and a few others. Are they providing the financial support to keep you racing, or are you funding this yourself? Like, how, what's your program like?
It's pretty rad. It's a combination. So I guess over the years, I've somehow convinced some folks to throw a couple dollars at me. So it's not enough to do everything, but it definitely, definitely helps. And so, yeah, there's some money involved now, and it helps to get me to some races and feed myself, and that's good.
That's good. Are you still, you were a music teacher. Do you still do that, or is racing now kind of a full-time thing?
No, I'm a full-time athlete / advocate is the title that I've given myself.
Very cool. And what's, I think you just picked up some kind of deal with REI, right?
Not quite. It's just, they've been, you know, putting my face on things. And that's been really, really cool. They've, given me a platform for a video that was made by the Never Not Collective, directed by Shelma June, who is also a woman of color, which was really cool. So it's the first project I've done where everybody involved was a woman. There was a supplemental article that went with that. So I feel like I've kind of been doing stuff with REI a lot in the past couple of weeks. So it's like a loose partnership, but not a full-on thing yet. Right. Maybe. We'll see.
Cool. Well, yeah, it seems I haven't watched the video. I read the story. I was going to watch the video and I ran out of time before this. But I'm going to put links to all of this, and you and I can talk after if there's links to particular things you think are super cool that you've done. We can add all that to the post that'll go on Bike Rumor along with this episode, so people can kind of check out some of the stuff you're doing and your, all your social tags. So speaking of video, though, you produce a fair amount of video and audio. You've got a little podcast and blog content on your site. Like, you're producing quite a bit of content, which must eat up a bunch of time. Is that just a brand building thing for you, or is it in a way to get the message out, or are you using that to generate some income also?
I think it's a combination of messaging and brand building. There's not a whole, there's not really any money involved in that part yet. I do have a Patreon, and that helps kind of offset the out of pocket costs of producing the stuff, but labor wise, not so much. But yeah, I have a YouTube channel and a podcast, and I really just wanted to have the opportunity to create content for people that maybe identify with me and would feel more comfortable hearing stories of other women of color. I feel like my story's been out there a lot. People have been, you know, telling my story for a couple of years now and on some pretty major platforms, which has been really, really cool. But I am fully aware that I'm not the only Black person and or Black woman who rides bikes. I might be one of the very few racing right now, but there are so many ways that you can enjoy bikes. And I feel like this industry as a whole is very lacking in representation for women of color and, you know, Black women specifically. So, the whole point of the podcast was to give these other women a platform to share their stories and say, like, hey, world, like, I'm here too, and I do these really cool things, and this is how I enjoy bikes, and this is how I got into biking, and, like, maybe we can use those stories to figure out how to get more folks in here. And then the YouTube channel is just kind of, like, me making the stuff that I wish existed for me. Right. Like, I wish someone had explained something, like, my fix a flat thing. Like, this is how it made the most sense to me. So maybe your brain works like my brain and this will help you as well, type of thing. Cause I feel like a lot of the videos, it's like, what are you saying to me? Like, how, what? and so just sort of another way of saying similar information that might just resonate with someone, you know?
You also made a comment about how there's other ways to enjoy a bike besides racing. And to me, it's funny because, like, I enjoy a bike a lot more when I'm not racing. So what I was going to say was next, you know, from the outside looking in, it seems like you're simply creating a lot of content that's similar to what other racers and vloggers and bloggers are making. It's just that none of them happen to be an African-American female pro cyclist. So by providing simple content like your how to change a flat tire video, or, you know, sharing a story about a race weekend with your face on it, it kind of shows that it's not just white dudes that are doing it. It's showing other people of color, you know, maybe they've got a little more comfort in trying it because, like you said, they can identify with you versus somebody else that's maybe speaking a different way.
Yeah, perhaps.
Kind of the point?
Yeah, it's part of the point, for sure. I don't know. I think it gets kind of, like, muddy sometimes, though, because, like, I feel like I definitely create my stuff for people of color and women of color to enjoy and resonate with, but I feel like it transcends that as well. Like, I feel like you don't have to be a Black person to enjoy the stuff that I create. Just like, I mean, I consume all of the stuff that's on the internet made by, you know, white folks all the time. And maybe I don't identify with them as a white person, but I do identify with them as, you know, a cyclist and, you know, as a person trying to figure out, like, mechanics. Or right now I'm watching a lot of bike packing videos, and I've not seen a single one made by a person of color. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just haven't found it. So yeah, just, I don't know. I feel like there's comfort and relatability.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I gotta say, like, I really enjoy your videos, the ones I've watched, because they are so straightforward, right? Like, there's no apparent agenda. You're not politicizing it. It's all positive. You're just showing how to change a flat, right? Which, to me, makes it inclusive and comfortable to watch, which I also understand is a tricky thing to say for a white guy to say, because it runs the risk of sounding like, well, I will accept your message because it doesn't challenge me. And, you know, like, to go a little bit further into adding diversity and stuff, I think there's a certain level of uncomfortableness some people have with whatever, you know, like dealing with people of other colors or races, genders, whatever it is. Maybe we need to be challenged, and maybe there's not enough going on that seems normal, and maybe we don't realize how our words and actions are affecting others. And so I know you've done some social media comments on things that have happened, like some of the announcing that was going on at Sea Otter. I think you got roped into having to answer that. I don't know if you meant to or not, but I was reading that, and it seems like, I don't know, I'm kind of stumbling to make a question out of it, but you get where I'm coming at. It's like,
oh, I'm waiting for your question.
Yeah, I don't really know what the question is. I mean, it's just, it's like, how do you challenge people's notions of what's normal without, you know, in a way that they can relate to?
I feel like it's important to remember that everything isn't for everyone. And so my challenging your notion of what's normal might not be for you. It might be for me and for people like me to not feel isolated and gaslit and alone in a space where folks are often afraid to be challenged, where maybe they've spoken up or said something similar and have gotten completely just demolished with, don't ruin my sport and politicize, and that's not racist, and you can't bring race into things, because if we want to get rid of racism, we need to stop talking about whatever. Figure out what quote you want to, like, throw. It's just all ridiculous to me at this point. But I feel like I speak up because I know that I'm not the only one that feels a certain way. And that is not an assumption. Like, I know for a fact I'm not the only one.
Totally.
And that voice does not get through. It does not cut through the noise very often. And I've somehow found a way to cut through the noise. And so I feel like it's partially my responsibility to use that ability to cut through the noise to say important things. And I think these things are important. And so I say them.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, and to me, it's like, I always look at things as from a marketing perspective, right? Like, you need, as a marketer, you need to deliver the message, your brand message, whatever, in the way that's going to be most well received by the intended recipient. And for me, when I see some, you know, there's all different ways of doing it, right? And we need angry people who are just going to scream, and then we need people who are going to present information in a way that's, I don't even know what the right word is, because it's all going to sound bad, like tolerable, you know, or like it doesn't immediately assault you. And so you're open to receiving that message and actually contemplating what it means for a minute. And, you know, like, I like the way you present your arguments, because to me, it's like, it's thought provoking. It's not just all of a sudden I have to have a wall up because I'm afraid of what's coming next type thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's usually my goal, where it's like, all right, I know that maybe the person I'm speaking to directly, who I've had this interaction with, is a brick wall at this point, and they're not going to hear me. But there are other people that are paying attention to this because now it's out there, right? So yeah. This is an opportunity for maybe those folks to understand a different perspective that they did not have access to. And so I try and take those opportunities when I have the energy to do so and present those perspectives in as plainly, I guess, as a way as possible and as directly as a way as possible. And I don't think that, I honestly don't think that's my responsibility. I feel like it's other people's responsibility to learn and go find those resources and educate themselves. But I do occasionally decide to take that on and present that information in a way that people can digest a little more easily, just because, you know, there are trigger words. Like when you use the word, if you call someone a racist, they're just going to start defending themselves. And if you, you know, there's certain things that when you say it, people just shut down, and anything else you say after that.
Yeah. Well, they don't hear it. And I think it's because, you know, somebody may not think of themselves as a racist, right? But maybe they're doing something or saying something that is not so obviously to them anyway, a racist remark or a racist action, but because they don't identify as being a racist, that's not who they are. They can't like, you call them a racist, they're like, no, I'm not. Like, oh, so obviously anything else you say is just going to be false and ridiculous. I'm not going to pay attention.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And so I think that's the tricky part is pointing out, it's like anything, right? But pointing out the error of somebody's ways in a way that's not going to immediately set their alarms off. And it's tricky, but I like, you know, for me, I'd much rather have a conversation where I can learn something and be open to, you know, and both parties are open to having a productive dialogue as opposed to just a screaming match where everybody just wants to win, right? Like, it is tricky. And I think, for better or worse, you've kind of created a little bit of a platform and a personal brand where I'm curious, like, because you have commented on some things and you've become a little bit of a celebrity for promoting inclusion and representation, that sort of carries with it public expectations. So when somebody in the cycling industry says something that could be considered racist or inappropriate, do you find that people are looking to you for commentary?
They might be.
Do you feel any responsibility to provide some?
I don't think it's my responsibility, to be honest. I feel like I do the things I do because I care about them. And that's kind of been my drive from the beginning. It's like, I care about representation, so I do this work to promote it. I care about diversity and inclusion, so I do this work to promote it. I enjoy bike racing, so I race bikes. Like, I do the things that I care about and I enjoy because that's what keeps me sane. And not everything in the, like, not everything that happens is something that I agree and or disagree with. Like, I feel like sometimes people want me to be outraged about things that I'm not mad about. and I feel like if you're upset about that, then by all means, take that on. But I don't feel like it is my responsibility to take down all trolls. I do think you need to speak up anytime someone's being racist. I do think you need to speak up. Sometimes anyone's being any kind of, you know, phobic, transphobic, you know, homophobic, whatever phobia that's out there, because there's so many. But I know that if I try to, as an individual, take on every single problem in even just the cycling world, I wouldn't last very long. And so there's probably a phrase that everyone has heard, which is like, pick your battles and, you know, choose your battles. And I try to do that as best as I can.
Well, you wouldn't have time to ride if you were trying to tackle it all. Given the times that you felt like really frustrated or insulted, like, how do you keep your cool?
I have a very close inner circle where I don't have to keep my cool. and they hear it. And I do try and make sure that when I do have those energies, we'll call them, that I keep them where they need to be and process them before I speak out, because otherwise it might not be so pretty.
Yeah. Well, I think we could all stand to do that before we post something on social or say something out loud, right? Like, it always helps to take a little breather, think it through.
I like to process things first. And even with, like, the sea otter thing, like, when the initial tweets came in, after, you know, the response to my tweets came in from the subject, we'll call it, I made sure to say, like, I heard what you said, and I'm doing something right now, but I will respond to this later. Like, I didn't feel equipped in that moment to articulate what I needed to say. Like, I knew all the things that I wanted to say, but I didn't know how to articulate them in that moment. And so I feel like it's important to take that time sometimes, if you have it.
It's a very mature attitude to take on that. So this next thing, it's kind of a long, I have a long story to get to, but there is a question at the end. And there's actually, my wife just found this quote that was more about gender, because she went to the, there's like a literary festival here, and Annie DeFranco was speaking. And her quote was, "I don't want to put the burdens of my perception onto a possibly less fettered creature, a creature that is maybe going to reinvent this equation for themselves. Please do not let me constrict their sense of possibility before they decide for themselves what it is." And she was talking about gender relations and how she would talk to her kids. So we were talking before we started recording, my wife's been on a bit of a tear the past few years, really reading into the history of race and social injustice in America. And so she shares all of that with us. And so now my son tells us that he can't just look at someone and judge them based on their immediate merits, like are they friendly, funny, or do they have shared interests. Now he has to consider all these other things about what their social situation might be and why, and what he should and shouldn't share about his own life. And it's all kind of because he doesn't want to make somebody feel bad or accidentally say the wrong thing. So now he even tells us point blank. He's like, I'm just not going to go out of my way to talk to new people because I don't know what the situation is, and I don't want to ask questions where they might get offended. So, you know, we were just trying to teach him.
How old is your son?
14.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so, but this has been an ongoing education for the past couple of years for us. So it's, you know, like we were just trying to teach him that some people's situations in life are better or worse off, not because of, you know, what they're doing now. It's because of circumstances from generations prior and things well outside of their control. But I feel like it's kind of backfired because really we do want him and our daughter to just go out and, you know, make friends, like judge people based on whether or not they're fun to be around and if they're nice. And which is kind of a long way of asking, like, do you feel that other cyclists and sponsors and race directors and people in general are ever kind of tiptoeing around getting to know or including people of color because they're afraid of saying something wrong or treating people, you know, incorrectly by accident?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Well, yeah, and I'm not trying to trap you or anything.
I'm genuinely curious. I think that might happen in general, not just in bikes, right? Like, I feel like, especially in this racial climate in America, at least, like, I can't speak to the world as I've only seen parts of it. But I feel like the topics of race and discrimination and injustice are much, I mean, they've always been big, but I feel like they're at a peak right now where we're like constantly seeing it, constantly talking about it, and especially in this age of the internet and social media where it's being kind of thrown in our face all the time. And so I think our perception of how we look at people is affected, like, internally. Like, that's the internal bias that we have. And so I think any person that talks to another person is going to have these like questions within themselves of like, what is this person, you know, what is this person going through? Like, should I approach this differently? And like, I get like a lot of emails and messages of people who like tell me about this black person that they know and like ask me how they should talk to them or how they should do this thing for them. And I think that's just something that like a lot of people deal with. Like, a lot of people have these thoughts and these reservations, even though they don't speak about it openly. And I find it kind of humorous and sad at the same time, but not surprising, because we haven't been taught how to have open dialogues and have natural conversations with people, because we are in a society that has been sweeping all of these other things under the rug for so long that there is a reason to be nervous. There is a reason to be scared, you know? And it just goes into this idea that, you know, race and racism and all of this stuff is systemic. It's ingrained in our society, and there's not really any getting around it and any really avoiding it, but we still try to. And we're really bad at it, like really, really bad at it. I don't know if that answered your question.
Sort of, but now I have more questions. You know, you say we should be nervous, we should be scared. Like, nervous about what and scared of what?
I feel like there's so many things that just don't get addressed. I don't like that your son can't have a conversation without feeling terrified. Like, but I understand why he does. Like, I feel like there are a lot of things that we as a society have ignored for so long that there's this, I don't know, it's just always going to be this elephant in the room, even if it's not a big deal right now. And I think that's kind of the experience that people of color have had for forever, you know, where there's always an elephant in the room, but we've just learned how to deal with it. We've just learned how to go with it because we don't have a choice, right? Where now I feel like white people are being made more aware of what's been happening all along, and they don't know what to, they don't know how to deal. They don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, it's not the reality that they've known. And it's, you know, like there's a book, and I wish I could remember the name of it. It's more about just kind of habits and forming the right habits. And so when you've convinced yourself that the world is a certain way, or you are a certain way, like you say, okay, I'm a cyclist. Well, if somebody comes up to you and says you're not a cyclist, you're not going to know, like you won't accept that because that's not how you identify. And so it's kind of like we were saying, like when somebody calls somebody racist, right? Like I think people in general, they have their worldview, whatever their gender and race is, like, and then when something comes along that challenges that, then it's all of a sudden their identity is wrapped up in this one reality. And their brain does not want to let that change because your brain is trying to protect this nice, comfortable stasis of your environment. And it takes a lot of mental energy to overcome that and start to form new habits and change your perceptions and all that. So it's, yeah, like I do see that there's a lot of tension and uncomfortableness and everybody's trying to figure everything out right now, but it really is going to take a long time. Just
I think, oh, yeah.
Only because of the way the human mind works, you know, like you can't just wake up one morning and be like, oh no. Yeah, whatever.
There is no overnight solution. And I think that's why it's important for me to talk about these things, because I feel like normalizing these conversations is the only way we're going to move toward getting over all of that stuff. Like, I don't know if we'll ever, I don't think in my lifetime we'll get over it, but I feel like even now, like it's 2019 and we're talking about reparations, and like that's blowing so many people's minds. Like, I don't know if you are familiar with that conversation, but it's just like, it's a topic. I don't even know what to do with, you know?
I mean, so I almost never watch the news. I get my news through my wife, and even then it's filtered just because I'm so focused on Bike Rumor and growing the business that it's, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time to keep on all the details. But it's, you know, like I know that is a fresh conversation again on the subject matter, but it's, I mean, what's your opinion? Like, would that actually solve anything?
I don't think we have time for that conversation. Okay.
That's fine. That is a big question.
But I think it's just one of those things where it's like, that's a conversation that, you know, Black folks have been having since slavery, and something that white people effectively were able to kind of sweep under the rug for a really long time. And now it's a conversation again. And that's why I'm like, I don't like how did we actually get this into like a mainstream conversation? Like, how did that even happen? Like, how did we get people to the point where they can talk about that? I don't know. It's just, there's so much. And I think for me, bikes are so simple and they're a community building tool, and they bring people together in a way that a lot of things don't. I think the two things that do that for me are bikes and music, right? Like, everyone can enjoy music because there's so many ways to enjoy music. Everyone can enjoy bikes. There's so many ways to enjoy bikes. And I feel like this community has given me access to so many different kinds of people. And so if I can talk about these things, I feel like so many different kinds of people that don't normally have access to these sort of conversations are now granted access to it and are now maybe listening to it and maybe being upset by it, but at least they're talking about it, right?
Right.
Whereas before they were effectively able to avoid it because, you know, not for nothing, we are pretty segregated as a country. Like, a lot of, once you get out of grade school and high school, you start to develop your, you know, core group of friends, and a lot of people end up gravitating toward people that are exactly like them, people that they relate to. And so you can effectively become isolated and not have to deal with anything other than what's in your immediate circle, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's why people get so upset when you bring race into things or gender into things, because it's not a conversation that they are normally forced to have. And so now they're being, in their opinion, forced to deal with it, and they're not happy about it.
Yeah. Well, they were perfectly content not dealing with it, right?
Yeah. It's like, I was doing great. Like, why are you bothering me with this?
Yeah. Well, what's, so I'm curious, like, without belaboring the point, what are one or two questions that you think people struggle with, or topics that people think, or that you think people really struggle with the most to bring up in conversation? Like, what are some of the, I mean, maybe most frequent errors of communication that people should be more aware of?
You mean like deeper than the idea of race and gender? Because those are clearly the hottest button topics.
Yeah. Like I see, you know, like Right. Strolling through Twitter, and sometimes you'll see people like take a snippet of something a politician said where, you know, like, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, and they said something thinking it was well-meaning and they're trying to do the right thing, and then it just gets picked apart. And it's, you know, there's obviously some phrases and words and ways of describing people that to many people seem benign, but obviously are not. Like, what, I mean, I'm just hoping maybe you could give people a couple of examples as sort of just like something to kickstart a new way of thinking.
One that I hear a lot is, I don't see color. And that one is super, super frustrating. Because first of all, unless you cannot see, you definitely see color. And again, you know, our idea of, you know, race and cultures are so socially ingrained in us. Like, it's internal at this point. You don't not see it. We consume so much information, and that dictates how we see the people around us. So, like, for example, a really, like, maybe an explosive example of this is, you know, right after 9/11 in this country, there was a lot of really, really terrible rhetoric about, you know, people who identified as Muslim. And that was just a very broad label that was just given to a person, you know, like, everyone decided what that meant to them. And that came with such a negative rhetoric that became socially ingrained to the point where people were afraid of anyone that they thought might identify as Muslim. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of, like, I don't see color is crap, because you see what you've been trained to see. I don't think we're born, like, to hate people or born to, like, discriminate against people, but we're taught to. And we learn that, and we do it. Everyone, to some extent, does it. Every single person does it.
Yeah, it blows my mind when you see, like, high school kids that are skinheads or, you know, like, just such racists. Because, like, you're way too young. And you've never traveled. Like, you don't even know what you're talking about. This is something somebody told you to believe, and you just believed it.
But they believe it, and that's so dangerous.
I know.
And it's in their core now. And yeah, maybe they'll, you know, go out into the world and learn something better. Like, I feel like who I was in middle school and high school and who I am now are very different. I don't feel like I was, like, a raging, discriminatory, like, person. But I was not... I wasn't there yet, you know, I'm, and there's still so much, even at this stage of my, you know, level of understanding, there's so much more that I still need to learn and so much more that I want to learn. And I think that's the important thing that people forget, where it's like, we feel like we know all the things we need to know, and that's completely false. We have so much to learn, and just being open to learning that. So yeah, I don't see color as crap. Like, just please, if you say something like that, stop saying it. It's horrible. It's not good, and it's not accurate, and it's actually very harmful to the progression of dealing with race and diversity and inclusion and all of the things involved with it. It does not help. It harms so much more.
Who else is doing it right? Like, people, I think everyone should follow you on social media, but who do you follow? Who do you think is getting a good message out?
In general or in...
I mean, if we can keep it towards cycling or outdoor, but yeah, general, whoever, doesn't matter.
I mean, I like people who speak up for the things that they believe in. I like people who speak up for the things they believe in and are also human, like have a like a human side to what they present on the internet. I think Amanda Batty does a really good job. I think Ellen Noble does a really good job. The Brown Bike Girl is based in New York, and she specifically does like equity and diversity training and like programming and stuff for people who are interested in learning more about that kind of stuff. And that's more on the like, you know, street advocacy side of things, where, you know, in New York, like 3 or 4 people have died in the past 10 days, which is insane. But parts of those conversations have to do with equity and diversity, and it's ingrained in pretty much any topic. There's always another side to that story that doesn't get told. But I'm trying to think of, I follow a ton of people, but I try and keep my social media follows fun, right. I guess. There's just a lot of stuff on the internet that can you just be in a constant state of rage if you want to. There's that Baldwin quote where it's like, to be black in America is to be in a constant state of rage, which is pretty much accurate. but I think it's important to keep it fun too, just so we can continue to do the work because it's necessary.
Okay, I got some racing questions for you. Well, cycling, okay. Not just racing. I think you're 32, right?
I am.
So you mentioned that you got a little bit started in the racing stuff late in life. What's the average age of the leaders in the pro women's peloton right now?
I don't know. I feel like they're all babies.
Yeah, that's kind of why I stopped racing.
There are some women that are older than me and some women that are around my age, but I feel like the majority of them, I'm like, oh man, I'm so old. yeah, they're all in their early 20s or U23 still, and killing it, crushing it. They're young. They're real young.
Yeah, but I think it's similar in mountain biking. Like by age 30, it's kind of like the young people are coming up.
Oh yeah, I'm a dinosaur
taking over
at this point.
So what's next? Like how many more years are you going to try and race at the level?
I mean, I'm still chugging along, trying to get toward that goal, becoming pro, and getting a contract. And it might happen. It might not. I haven't given up hope. I'm still pretty optimistic about it, but I think the broader scope of my advocacy is what's, I guess, next. Advocacy and fun, just kind of expanding what it means to be a woman of color on a bike and what that looks like. I think the whole conversation of representation is always going to be super important. And I don't want it to end up being so narrow that people don't see the possibilities.
Right. So SRAM got a lot of praise for putting a black woman on the front and center in their Access ETAP launch materials. And I heard that you helped find the models for that campaign, right?
They asked me, I threw some suggestions in. Yeah. Cool. And they use a couple.
Do you think that sort of thing, like just having that person present on such a big campaign, helps to bring new faces and races into cycling?
For sure. I think it's important to see people that you can identify with doing things that you didn't think you could do. For me, I feel like I've never had that barrier where I didn't feel like I could do something, but that's because I was raised to believe I could do anything. And my, you know, my village, we'll call them, always presented me with these images of black people doing these things that quote unquote black folks don't do, you know? So I never had that, but I know a lot of people who still feel like black people don't do certain things. And I think that's ridiculous because anybody can do whatever they want. It's just a matter of doing it. And yeah, there are actual barriers beyond like, oh, I want to do this thing. But just thinking that black people don't do them shouldn't be one of them, you know?
Right. So what's the next thing you want to do? I hear you're planning a big bike packing trip.
Yes.
Where are you going?
It's still secret. It's a secret bike packing trip that won't be secret after it's done. But
are you going solo or do you have a small group?
It's just me and my friend Sam Scipio. Nice. Who is an endurance mountain bike racer. So she is equipped for this sort of thing. And I'm equipped. I just haven't done it yet. So yeah. It's my first time. And I'm not scared of like riding a bunch. I've done bike tours before, but this is my first self-supported bike tour. And that's completely new to me. I have not lived on a bike.
Yeah. So you're probably packing twice as much as you need.
No, I'm being really good, and she is preparing me really well. She made their spreadsheets, and I've been watching a lot of like videos and reading a lot of blogs and learning a lot of things. So I leave in 2 days, and I am in the packing phase, like the actual packing phase. And so I'm learning how to use the different bags and like how to put things in them, which there are not enough videos on that, actually. And I'm probably going to end up making some when I get back, because I am so lost and figuring things out as I go along. And I feel like I could use some assistance, and Sam's been really helpful. Like I've been like texting and calling like, hey, how do I get my sleeping bag in this contraption? And she's like, just shove it in there. Like, all right.
Good luck.
So yeah, that part of things I do not know how to do. I'm used to putting my stuff in a car and then just riding the bike part. But I'll get there. I'll figure it out. I always do. I'm not worried about it.
Nice. Are you a mountain biker too? Or is this kind of a first time really going mountain biking for a long time too?
I am doing it on a Live Brava, which is a cross bike. And it's going to be a combination of paved and like gravel dirt roads.
Cool.
Lots of climbing. But I have been getting into mountain biking this year because my husband has pretty much given up completely on road. And so if I want to ride with him, it's got to be on a mountain bike. And I'm really having a good time. And yeah. I promised myself that I would never take it super, super seriously, that it would always be a fun thing. Just because I went, you know, pretty overboard with the roads, the right. road racing thing. And I think I only have room in my life for one of those kind of obsessions. So I think I just want to keep mountain biking as purely recreational. And I've been having a blast kind of pushing my limits of what I thought I could do, because I did not think I would be a dirt person. And I tried cyclocross and hated it. But as long as I can like stay on the bike, like if I don't have to get off, I'm good. I don't want to like climb any stairs or do any running or like hop over anything, but I'll go ride and like get over some logs, because the wheels can do it. That's like the best part. Like with a road bike, yeah, like bunny hop over stuff where your tire goes, but with a mountain bike, you just roll right over it.
Right. You might be surprised. Great. I used to think cyclocross was the dumbest idea in the world until I did one, and then it's my favorite thing. But
I tried it. Not my thing.
Nope.
I gave it a real shot, and I did well, but I did not enjoy it. And that is something that I think a lot of people in cycling culture don't pay attention to enough, where I feel like we're told what we should enjoy and we're told what we should like. Like people really, really like cyclocross. It's a huge culture. I enjoy watching it, but I don't enjoy doing it. And I think for me, it's important to understand that.
Yeah. Well, another sign of maturity, because yeah, people force themselves to do stuff because they think they should, or
yeah,
think they should be good at it.
Don't do it. If it's not fun, it's not worth it. And for me, getting off of my bike to jump over a barrier is not my idea of a good time. So
right on. Well, I appreciate your time. Is there anything you want to add or finish with?
I think if someone has made it this far in this podcast interview, I am thoroughly impressed, because right. I'm pretty sure I lost some folks along the way.
Well, I hope not. I think it was a great conversation. Like, I really appreciate your time and your input, and yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was a big one. I have just one quick takeaway that I want to mention. Don't be afraid to have these conversations. Don't be afraid to include others that are different than you. And if you're the one that's quote unquote different, help foster that communication when you can. This is how we grow. This is how we and the sport of cycling gets better. Thanks for listening. If you like this, please share it with a friend and hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast player and give us a review. That's the fuel for our fire that helps keep us going and getting amazing guests like Aisha. Until next time, keep the rubber side down.